You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 365. Notre Dame did lose to USC, as most people expected. 45-27, an 18-point differential there in Notre Dame scoring and USC scoring. You know, there's a couple things that surprised me in this game, but there's definitely some similarities, again, just with what we've seen throughout this Notre Dame football season. So since this is our final episode of the 2016 season, obviously we'll be doing some later on this fall, but as far as for the season itself, we're going to mix things.
Season's over with.
We're going to mix things up just a little bit slightly. Starting with, what did you love? What did you hate? And for me, there's two things that I love. Number one is Nico Fertitta. He was recruited to play special teams, and he had an incredible hit on special teams that for a moment looked like it gave Notre Dame the ball back. Ended up, it was a targeting call. Watching the game, I didn't think it looked like targeting. I didn't think there was any helmet-to-helmet contact. I thought it was a bogus call. But, Randall, you showed some pictures after the fact, and there definitely was helmet-to-helmet contact. And so it was the right call then.
It was on defense. He wasn't on special teams on that play.
You're right.
But, yeah, everybody was complaining about it. But if you look back, looking at it, I know it's probably not what – I was trying to find reasons to say it wasn't targeting, but if that would have been reversed, if that would have happened to Notre Dame player, we would have won it targeting.
What's so ironic is that there's been a couple targeting penalties or situations that have not been called that would have been in Notre Dame's favor this season, and we've always been waiting, well, why don't they review it? Why don't they review it? Well, finally, we got a review.
The annoying thing, it was the second review. It wasn't even the first review, which the first one, I think, was to see if it was a fumble or the spot or something else. Then the next one was for target. Like, that's what's... It's just very frustrating how inconsistent they call this.
Yeah.
I mean, this could have probably gone either way.
If you're going to call it like this, then call it like this every time.
Yeah.
Something else that I love was this is the end of a miserable season. And I'm just glad to get it over with. I've been wishing for the end of it for a while, and I'm just glad it's over now. And now we can start talking about, thinking about, and discussing options and situations for 2017. So that's all of my love, or just things that, you know, really I thought about as far as things that I took away from this game that I did enjoy.
You want me to go with the love before the...
Yeah.
Well, one thing I did like is the intensity of some of the players, like you mentioned. I thought guys were still playing hard. You know, even though it was this last game, they were down. You know, you had Josh Adams was one guy that kept running hard, trying to make that play. I mean, obviously, Fertitta and the team didn't quit. I think this was different from, you know, 2 years ago when USC blew out Notre Dame. That was just, it seemed like there was no fight left in that team.
Yeah.
These guys were still trying their hardest.
And you know, that's one reason why I always thought that Notre Dame could win the next game throughout this season is because it never looked like they had quit.
Yeah. And another thing is, if you take away the special team score, Notre Dame actually did pretty good with USC. If you take away this.
They have 17 points that they scored on offense. So if you take away their, they had one interception for a touchdown, two special teams touchdowns.
Yeah. So Notre Dame did good against USC if you take away the special teams.
Yeah.
And it was better than I expected. I didn't expect them to, you know, get as many stops as they did. I figured it'd be easier for USC to score. But that was definitely one thing I liked in this game.
All right. And then was there more love?
Well, I'd have to agree with you that that it was the last game of the season. I'm not tired of football. I'm just tired of watching this Notre Dame season.
I'm just ready for a clean slate to start over. So what did we hate? The one thing, obviously, a lot of things went wrong for Notre Dame in this game, but the thing that I just really hated was Jerry Tillery. I mean, one thing that I think of Notre Dame is that we are honorable, that our players do the right thing, and twice he did things. The head, when he kind of walked, kicked the player's head, it wasn't ferocious by any means. However, it was still wrong.
Yeah.
And then, and I was more upset, actually, I think, with him stepping on the player's foot as he was stepping over him. And I guess this would kind of go into one thing that I like, but I did like how Brian Kelly got after him and his other, and his, the other teammates really got after him too. Because that is not, and I still believe it, that it's not acceptable at anywhere, but especially at Notre Dame. I do think that the players, coaches, and just the administration, they do take things like this seriously.
And it looked like Brian Kelly talked with him on the sideline, then he talked with the ref and found out what had actually happened, and then he went back to Tillery on the bench and let him have it there, which he deserved it.
Did you have anything that you hated?
Special teams. I don't even know if that qualifies for the hate. I mean, the hate almost seems
it's so severe that there's not a word for it.
Yeah. Special teams definitely at the top of the list.
Yeah, that was awful. Okay, so
one thing I will add to the love, that Brian Kelly, despite what people thought, you know, it's unusual to keep your team out at halftime, but I did like that he kept them on the field to talk to them, and he said he wanted to do that because he could see all the players. The way the locker room's set up, you know, he wasn't able to see everyone, and he wanted to tell them. I mean, basically they say he told them that they have to step up. Offense, special teams. He says, you guys got to make some changes and step up. And so it was good to see that, even though that is not normal to keep them out on the field at halftime like that.
Do you know how long they were kept out on the field before they did go into the locker room?
It wasn't very long, but you always see teams go in after. I mean, yeah. They go in right away. The fans were booing them being out there, but hey, Brian Kelly was doing something different. He was willing to try something else, and that was good to see.
Yeah, I agree with you. Okay, so let's talk about what we expected. And there's a couple things, expected / predicted. One thing was that even though Notre Dame was a major underdog, they still, I did say I think they're going to lead at some point in this game, and they did. It was in the first quarter, but USC marched down, kicked a field goal, Notre Dame responded with a touchdown, and they led for a moment, although it was pretty brief. Another thing was that we expected to see some different players involved, and there definitely were. I don't have the targets for the wide receivers, but Corey Holmes was out on the field a ton, and Torrey Hunter did play a little bit, but didn't play much, and so maybe that's partially why.
Well, Holmes was targeted 10 times going into this game. And I think he had 6 targets in the first half of this game.
Wow.
And he didn't look too good on some of them.
Yeah.
He had some drops.
He had
2 drops.
And that was the knock on him in the fall, was that he wasn't catching balls very well. He was better off catching deep passes than he was on shorter routes.
Yeah.
All right, that's all that I had as far as kind of what we expected and that we saw it on the field. Was there anything that stuck out to you? And then we'll just go through kind of what went wrong with this game.
The score, our predictions were pretty close. I mean, this is what we expected from the...
Well, I expected it to be closer to 14, 10 or 14 points.
For Notre Dame?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the spread?
The spread, yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
But I know Eric... who hasn't been on the podcast recently, but he was very close. I believe he had, I think he had USC at 45 and Notre Dame at, I forget, within a few points of what they ended up, maybe 30 points or so. So he was very close. I'm guessing he might have won the competition there. So as far as what went wrong, I guess, before we do that, I did want to just talk, you had hit on it a little bit, how Notre Dame did pretty well defensively, and it's true, they only gave up 17 points. Notre Dame's defense only gave up 17 points. USC scored a field goal, and then a touchdown, and then another touchdown on 10 offensive drives. And so that's a 1.7 points per drive average. Notre Dame had 15 drives, and they scored four touchdowns, and then on the final touchdown, they went for the two-point conversion, didn't get it, ended up with 27 points, and that's a 1.8 average on 15 drives. So offensively, you could look at it that Notre Dame offensively outperformed USC's offense. However, the biggest factor to me in this game as far as what went wrong was special teams. And special teams has come up way too much this year, and there needs to be a major change as far as there needs to be a different coach coaching special teams.
I totally agree with you. Brian Kelly mentioned Biagi. I always forget how to pronounce his name. They brought in an analyst for special teams, and he was going to be more involved. But honestly, before he was involved, the special teams looked better. So I don't know what this analyst is, but it definitely didn't help. And I definitely don't think either of Booker or Biagi should be around, have anything to do with special teams next year. Nothing at all. And it was just unreal what they did on special teams. It seemed like they weren't aggressive enough on returns. And first of all, why are you kicking to one of the best kick returns in the country? Why do you keep doing it? Even after he's scored on a punt return, obviously, you don't have a lot of choice there. But why are you kicking to him on kickoffs?
Well, and even on punt on punting, just kick it out of bounds. I mean, even if you might end up losing 10 yards by doing that, because you're not going to get a perfect angle where it lands just right out of bounds. But to me, that's still a better option than giving up a 10, 15-yard return with the possibility of it being a touchdown.
Yeah, and one thing Reggie Brooks mentioned in the post-game show, which is a little hard to see on TV. I mean, you can see it better live. But his comment was that it looked like on kickoffs, like the when Notre Dame kicked it off, it looked like the players kind of slowed down. Instead of running through the blocks, getting to Jackson or whoever was returning the ball, it looked kind of like they slowed down, and there wasn't that aggressiveness there. And he just said that, that's obviously got to change.
Yeah, I didn't go back and rewatch it after I listened to the postgame show, but he said they started breaking down way too soon.
Yeah.
Instead of accelerating to the ball carrier. Anyway, I will be shocked. To me, I will be more shocked if there's not a new position coach at special teams than I will be if there's not a new face at defensive coordinator. So if it would either be Elston or who's the interim defensive coordinator right now?
Greg Hudson.
Exactly. And so, because I do think we need a new face at defensive coordinator, but to me, special teams is a bigger red flag right now as far as this is further off than our defense is off right now. So what I'd wanted to do, just for something different, is kind of ranking some of the issues that we had in this game and ranking them from 1 to 3, or depending how many major issues that we see. And it could be a big thing like special teams, which is what I have at the top of my list, or it could be something as small as Kaiser not going through his progressions. Just some generalized issues like that. So number one, and would you agree with this, that just in general, special teams had a missed field goal, which is the least of the problems when you look at special teams as a whole. But special teams at the top of my list, would it also be the top of your list?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even this, if it wouldn't have been from this game, would have looked completely different if it would have been for special teams mistakes.
Yeah, and maybe USC was maybe a little bit more conservative offensively after they did get the big lead. I'm sure they were. But still, you're just giving away 14 points. Just like that.
Yeah.
Okay, and Randall and I have been talking about this. So, Randall, what is our second topic or issue as far as what went wrong?
Well, one of the first things I noticed watching him is just the receiver rotation. I mean, we mentioned how Corey Holmes was in there a lot in the first half, was targeted a lot, and he's getting drops. And understand Torrey Hunter is injured, didn't play a whole lot. And USC does have good cornerbacks, but EQ could still make catches. Chris Fink was having a good game. You got Stepherson. Where was Stepherson in the first half?
So Corey Holmes, even though he was targeted, you said 10 times total for the game?
No, that was, I don't know what the total is for the, he was targeted 6 times in the first half, 10 okay. The whole year up to there.
Well, he finished with 4 catches and 29 yards, and that would put him, even though he caught the ball more than Kevin Stepherson, more than Josh Adams, he was still behind them in total yards.
Sanders
didn't record a catch. I'm not sure if he was targeted or not. I don't have those numbers in front of me. But EQ, Fink, Stepherson, Josh Adams were all ahead of Corey Holmes, even though the only one who caught the ball more times was EQ, who caught it 7 times for 94 yards.
And Corey Holmes has made catches this year, it has been a big play, like a third down. So he has made some of those. You can't go against it. But after he dropped the ball twice, you know, they were still trying to go to him. One of those was a third down. I mean, I don't know. Some of those were balls that should have been caught.
Definitely.
And why don't you have your best guys out there when you're going against a rival, the best team on your schedule?
And if he can't catch the ball, I think he needs to find a different position on the team.
He did good. He's done. It's not like he's dropped the ball up to this
point. I know, but that's been, he had problems with it in fall camp.
Yes, true.
And at least in camp, if he has an issue with it when you compare him to the other guys, then there's enough other receivers out there that he'll need to be, if he wants to play, I think he needs to move. Okay. Number 3, the third issue is Chris Fink. We've seen what kind of a monster he is. He's caught 2 touchdowns now. They need to be using this guy more. Obviously, I'm joking on this one. But Chris Fink did end up with 4 catches and had 1 touchdown, 53 yards total, and had 2 touchdowns now the last 2 weeks.
He looked pretty good in this game. I was impressed what he could do.
So, and since we're talking about him, and I am joking about this, I mean, obviously I don't want him to get more touches than EQ or Stepherson or Torrey Hunter if he's healthy, and C.J. Sanders and Boykin, and or maybe not Boykin, but Chase Claypool, some of those guys. But we did a little bit, we overestimated him slightly. He did finish the season with 10 catches for 122 yards, 2 touchdowns. And I think we had him at 17, 15 or 17, somewhere there. So, but still not horrible. I think he did okay. For when his number was called, he did okay. And he was involved as well in the punt return game, had a couple nice returns there. So I do like this player. I think he plays hard. He's only a sophomore, so if he keeps on putting in the work, there's definitely talent coming in some younger classes. But I think he could continue to contribute. So our serious issues, number 1, special teams, number 2, wide receiver rotation, and we didn't bring
you could up. Just for the number, you could add all positions for that. There's different positions you could throw into there, like the defensive line. You know, why did they wait? Elijah Taylor looked good. Why didn't he play until now?
Yeah.
Why haven't we seen him more?
Well, and that wouldn't be a game specific, but just a season question.
Why? Yeah. Just the rotation of some players and how they do things is just...
Well, and I think part
of
this...
Even on defensive line...
Yeah, I think some of this was, because it's the last game, trying to get different guys more looks or different looks.
That's the problem.
But
I don't care if it's the last game or your first game. This is a rivalry. This is your toughest opponent.
Well, and what's disappointing, if not for the special teams, it really would have been a game that could have come down to a couple drives in the fourth quarter.
It wouldn't have, they would have been way more aggressive on offense.
USC.
Yeah.
So let's go through the different position groups then, starting with the offense. Offensive line, again, false start, McGlinchey. I do think our Quentin Brown or Quentin Nelson didn't get a false start.
Yeah,
so.
He did.
He did?
Yes, because he was the one guy that we fussed about that would, well.
I thought it was Harrell and.
There was some confusion on that because I think they called on the field, they call it for Mustafa. But he did get, I think he was the one that got it on when they had a fourth down.
Okay.
But I remember he did because we talked about it in the
I know we had talked about it, but I thought
he was one guy we could depend on that wouldn't get a false start.
I didn't think he got it. This offensive line, is part of the reason why Notre Dame has been inconsistent offensively and continued to be inconsistent. And instead of being a major positive force of good, they haven't always been that. They have been at times, but they haven't been that consistently. And I do think it's something. I do think it'll be better next year, just because guys with more experience. But I don't like that this is what we have to expect. Where if it's a first-time starter, that he's going to majorly struggle and get multiple false start penalties. You know, even in maybe 7 to 9 games, get a false start penalty.
Yeah,
I think it'll be better, but I'm just disappointed in how this season went.
Oh, totally. It's disappointing because we had such praise for, you know, even Harry Hiestand coming into this season. We talked about offensive line coach, and
Pro Football Focus had the offensive line as one of the top 10 preseason offensive lines, and they had Quentin Nelson as the number one guard, and I believe it was also I believe both Nelson and McGlinchey were number one at their position, or at least one of them was number one. The other one was very high. I forget exactly.
Yeah, and it's one thing if this be the first game of the year, but this is the last game of the season, and you're still getting this many false starts.
Yeah, in the false start
and penalty
issue, it didn't get better throughout the season. I did at times. It looked like they did better, maybe as a unit in run blocking. But that was one thing that did not get better throughout the season was issue with false start penalties.
Well, we knew we could depend on one from McGlinchey, and we got it. So,
all right, let's talk about tight ends, closely related to the offensive line. Jerm Smythe.
Harrell did have that penalty for pulling a player off the pile. It was a what did they call it?
I don't know.
You can't pull the player off of the pile. The ref's got to see what's going on, and he was pulled for that. I mean, that you can't really complain about it too much. I mean, it wasn't like he was trying to.
As far as pulling him from the game.
No, I'm just saying calling that as a penalty. I mean, they know they're not supposed to do that, but it's not like.
Yeah, that's not an issue with the offensive line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I guess they should have drilled it into his head that you can't do that. He should have known. But they did some good blocking on Josh Adams' long run. We saw what they could do as a unit. But yeah, it's just all this small stuff that we just saw again in this game, last game of the season. So I will give them some praise. There is potential there, I will say. I mean, you can see on some plays, you know, what they can do, but yeah, too many times it hasn't been like that.
And then tight ends. And I don't have anything to add to this one because next year, assuming Alize Jones is back, we've got two freshmen coming in that are all-stars. Maybe they won't make a huge contribution right away, but Alize Jones is going to be a stud next year.
Well, and Durham Smythe, I don't think either of the freshmen will play next year. I'll say that now.
Yeah, you did say that before, and I think they will.
But things could change up because I think they'll have a new tight ends coach, so.
That is true.
Who knows what will happen. But they were non-existent in this game. I mean, I thought they would be used more just because of USC's good secondary, having the receivers cover. I thought they would use, you know, that's instead of using the tight ends, I mean, it just goes to show how they do not use their tight ends because they were going to these receivers that aren't used that much.
Mm-hmm.
And even Kaiser's one interception, he went from one side of the field and jumped to the other. He didn't go through his progressions. And I'd have to go back and look at the exact play, but very likely there was a tight end there at the center of the field. But what I mean, he didn't even go to the center. He went from one side to the other.
See, and that's why I don't think it's all coaching at the tight end position. I think it's talent, too. I think coaching is bad.
My reason for the coaching, it's looked good because you had Tyler Eifert and Kyle Rudolph were there and looked like stars. They would have made any coach look like a star. They have the talent. Look what they're doing in the NFL.
I agree. They were outstanding talent.
So I think that helped make.
But was Scott Booker their coach back then? I don't remember. I don't know who the tight ends coach was back. Definitely not for Kyle Rudolph, and I'm not sure about Tyler Eifert. But either way, let's talk about running backs. Josh Adams had an outstanding day, and like you mentioned, he was running hard the entire game. Even when it was clearly over, he was still running very, very hard. Finished with 180 yards. Opening series had a long run, 74-yard run, almost a touchdown, not quite. And Randall, you would probably did you want to jump in here and mention how last year that would have been a TD?
You know, I have to say something, but isn't it supposed, if you hit the pylon, isn't that supposed to count? Isn't that supposed to be a touchdown?
Well, his body.
I guess if the ball hits the.
Yeah.
It was
really close, probably closer than it looked initially. It was close.
Yeah, but last year that would have been a touchdown.
Yeah, yeah.
But he still ran. It was his longest run of the season, so I'll give him credit for that.
And then Tyrion Folston came in and gave Josh Adams a breather. He had 6 carries for 12 yards. And Dexter Williams also had a couple carries, 3 for -1.
What?
And the separation really became very clear as the season went on. And I think it was because Josh Adams was a little dinged up at the beginning of the football season. Because as the season went on, he just appeared like he just kind of separated himself. Even from Dexter Williams, too.
Well, even though we heard Brian Kelly rave about Dexter Williams.
Well, that is true. Was that against Stanford when he was the only player playing with passion?
Yeah. I don't know what happened with that situation. But, I mean, he did get a couple touches, but it wasn't a majority. I mean, it wasn't as much as what we expected it to be from what Brian Kelly made it sound like.
Yeah.
But yeah, Josh Adams played very physical. That, I mean, he played the best he has all year. He was diving forward. I mean, he was getting yards as he went down. It wasn't like getting stopped and getting pushed back. I mean, he was fighting for every yard. So maybe that is because of his injury. I just wish he would have run like that, been able to run like that the whole year.
All right, and then wide receivers. EQ led the way with 7 catches for 94 yards and 1 touchdown. Chris Finck had 4 catches for 53. Stefferson, 2 for 34. Each of those first three did catch a touchdown pass. And then Josh Adams had 2 for 30. Corey Holmes had 4 for 29. Folston had 1 for 10. And Deshaun Kaiser made the stat sheet on the receiving card. 1 catch for 4 yards. And this is another thing that you see in bowl games, just some trickery. Twice they had a play where Chris Finck threw the football. 2 passes. 1 was completed to Deshaun Kaiser. The other one was an incomplete pass, thankfully, because it could have been picked off.
Yeah, so, I was surprised to see some of those plays that Notre Dame ran. Some were kind of risky, but it was good to see them try some of this stuff. Like, they weren't sticking with the normal.
Well, if you're good enough, you don't do this kind of stuff. If you're a good enough team, you don't try.
You don't need the trickery.
You don't need this, at least not to this extent of trickery.
Yeah. But the receivers, Finck, I mean, he looked good. EQ finally got some touches there at the end of the game. Just wonder what happened to Sanders during all that. I mean, he wasn't even out there that much. And Torrey Hunter, we can throw it in there. It looks like this is Torrey Hunter's last year. Yeah. According to a tweet CJ Sanders sent out saying, you know, it's been fun playing with him. If you start looking at the list of his injuries that he's had at Notre Dame, he's already drafted to baseball team, got married. I think he's ready to move on. He's going to graduate. He's going to move on to something else.
I agree.
And he got hit for targeting at the beginning of the year that didn't get called. So he knows his life is in danger coming back to Notre Dame in another year. So
at some point we need to go through the different players who do have eligibility remaining and just talk a little bit about what, if they come back, what they'd be able to bring back and what we think about that situation, because there's a handful of guys that are at key positions or in starting roles that might not be here. Let's talk about quarterbacks. Randall, if I told you that Chris Finke, with his one of two passing, recorded a QBR of 18.6, and Malik Zaire with a 3 of 5 passes for 30 yards and one touchdown recorded a QBR of 94.9, where do you think Deshaun Kizer's 17 of 32 for 220 yards, two touchdowns, and one interception, where would you think that would fall?
Well, I actually know what it is, so it's a little hard to get. I would have said halfway in between there.
Okay, that's what I would have said too. Probably around 50. Well, his QBR is 19.2, which is less than a point higher than Chris Finke. And this is the ESPN QBR. I know there's a bunch of different, different quarterback ratings. Deshaun Kizer.
He did a pretty good job. Like we said, if he would get a, for his NFL grade, if it wouldn't be the first round, then maybe he would come back. It was almost like he was trying to get that second round grade so he can come back. He didn't have a very good game.
Yeah.
The interception, just bad. I mean, just a bad mistake by him. He took a couple sacks that he should have thrown it away. He did have some guys open sometimes. He just didn't make the read quick enough or get it out of his hands quick enough. And I think it comes back to him trying to do too much and making the big plays, which
is also
come back to the coaches.
Yeah. But that's also, I think, the case with Malik Zaire when he comes in.
Yeah.
And when he did come in, he scored a touchdown. I mean, it was the final, I don't remember how much time was on the clock exactly, but, you know, time was dwindling down. So it wasn't like it was actually playing to win the game. But he did move the ball down the field a little bit, scored a touchdown. I did see there was some pictures of Jack Swarbrick with his arms around Deshaun Kizer on the field, and I definitely think that this is more emotional than normal at the end of the season. I mean, a lot of things have got to be going through his head. This is not the way that Deshaun Kizer wanted to end his Notre Dame career, if that is what the case is going to be. So I'm sure that's weighing heavily on him. And obviously, it also didn't go the way he hoped in that he is, I don't think he built up his stock throughout the season as far as a legitimate first-round quarterback. So I think there's a lot of questions there, a lot of disappointment, and it's going to be,
I still think he's going to leave, but I'm less convinced now than I was a week ago.
That's exactly where I am. But for me, it's been starting to drop off even maybe a few weeks ago. Maybe
it has been like dropping off.
Midway through the season, maybe. Because after the Texas game, I was much more convinced that he's going after this year than I am now.
2 weeks ago, I would have been 99% sure that he's leaving. Now it's down to about 80%. that's where I'm going to put it.
That's funny because that's what I was thinking too. And I was thinking more... After Texas, I was saying probably 90% chance that, Deshaun Kizer's heading to the NFL. And now I was thinking the exact same thing of it as far as, like, now I'm about 80% sure that he's gone. Because I still think, sure, the NFL scouts will look at what he's done at Notre Dame, but they also look at a lot of other things that, just as far as accuracy and decision making and things like that, where he hasn't always done a great job, but they also have coaches that can help him improve in those areas.
Yeah.
Okay.
But hopefully one guy he can see is Dak Prescott, what he's doing in the NFL, which obviously if you play behind the NFL line like he does,
yeah,
with a running back sound like he does, it would make a huge difference. But he came back for another year.
Do you know, was he close to being projected as third rounder? Because, well, he ended up being, wasn't he a third round pick?
Yeah, I think
but
so.
But that was partially because there was some kind of off-field incident that kind of dropped his status a little bit.
Yeah, but I guess Kaiser can't see what happens to Deshaun Watson, but that'd be another guy that could have left last year, decided to come back for Clemson. So, too bad it's not a year after that to see how if his draft stock improved. But he'll find out. He said he's going to, in the next...
Do we know?
That's the next... I think he said a week.
Oh, that's soon. Okay. I thought it would be...
Well, he just kind of threw that out there. I don't think it's like, in a week from now, I'm going to make an announcement. There's nothing like that.
Has said that he does this for... I mean, I think he said all his players, so probably all the ones that potentially would be first or second round picks that would have eligibility coming back. I mean, these guys will get their draft status back, their projections.
He threw out four: Kaiser, McClinchy, Nelson, and Morgan are the ones that they are getting feedback for.
Okay. All right, let's talk about defense. Defensive line. Jaron Jones there's no option for him to come back. And defensive line, I don't know. How do you think they played? Were you impressed? Obviously, USC's offense has been playing very well.
They did pretty good. Jaron Jones, tipped a pass, got his long arms at the right spot, and tipped a pass. They were getting in the backfield. Elijah Taylor got in there. I was impressed what he did. Now the only problem with that is it makes you wonder why he didn't play more earlier in the year. Because within, was it three or four plays, he had made two big plays.
He ended the game with, I don't know how many plays he played, but he ended with three tackles. All three were solo and a tackle. One of those was a tackle for loss. Jaron Jones was tied for second on the team with tackle. He had seven tackles, four of which were solo. And 1.5 tackles for loss, and that one pass knockdown.
Jonathan Bonner was in there, made a big play, got to the quarterback. So we did see more of a rotation. We did see some of these guys in there that we haven't seen before. And I thought they did pretty good.
Notre Dame didn't record a sack, while USC recorded... six sacks. That was pretty disappointing. And that's not all in the defensive line. Let's move up then to the linebackers. Jaron Jones was the other guy tied for second. He had seven tackles, two solo, did not have a tackle for loss. James Onuwalo had five tackles, one tackle for loss. Bilal had four, one tackle for loss. And then Tavon Coney had two tackles. It seemed like Asmer Bilal was out there quite a bit. Oh, and I forgot to mention Greer Martini. Greer Martini had one tackle. But it seemed like Asmer Bilal was out there quite a bit. Maybe it is because when he was out there, he was recording tackles. But I'm excited about where this group is headed into next season, assuming that Niles Morgan is coming back. And I personally think that, I mean, I don't think he'll get a nearly good enough draft grade to make the jump to the NFL. I'm pretty confident he's coming back. But overall, pretty optimistic about where this group's headed in 2017.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, they did. It's the last we'll see of James Onuwalu. He had one tackle for loss. He definitely stepped up and had a good year. Better than I expected him to.
I completely agree. I never expected a ton out of him, or him to, or for, I never even expected him to be the best linebacker any given year, but he was this year.
And he was one of the guys that got after Jerry Tillery too. It showed, you know, that, you know, it showed a little bit of his leadership there, willing to get after guys when they do something stupid. Morgan, I think he did have a missed tackle on the one play. He hasn't had a lot of those this year, but there's a lot of things you could point out, but at this point in the season, it's just...
At this point, what difference does it make? Okay, let's talk about cornerbacks. Julian Love, maybe the biggest surprise of 2016, had 9 tackles, half a tackle for loss, continues to be everywhere, and we've seen this heavy rotation with the cornerbacks for quite a bit, with Cole Luke, with Troy Pride Jr. Troy Pride Jr. had 4 tackles. Cole Luke had 4, including 2 passes defensed. And then Jalen Elliott came in at safety and had he came in for, I guess, yeah, safety. I guess we'll get to that then.
Nick Coleman was in there. I didn't expect to see him out playing out there.
And he was out there at the beginning as a starter.
But Julian Love, very impressive. We even had the play on special teams. But the one thing that he did, I mean, he did make a mistake on the long touchdown that Adoree Jackson had. He, you know, took the wrong angle, which this happened with a bunch of these guy, defensive players, and it's something that they got to change, coaching that they got to change, and we'll give them a little bit of credit. They're young guys, but he let, this is one thing that Reggie Brooks talked about as well. Like, he let the Jackson get to the outside. He tried to go behind the blocker, and he should have gone in front of him and cut him off, forced him inside, and then Studstill can do his thing, help him. Well, you know, that's not the case, and I think that's happened a lot this year. But I think, I mean, that's something that you can coach. The thing I love about Julian Love is how hard he hits. He tackles, and he's making big plays.
Agreed. And then at safety, Devin Studstill, Drew Tranquil. Drew Tranquil had 6 tackles, 1 pass defended. Devin Studstill had 3. And then Jalen Elliott came in and also had 2 tackles. He came in for Drew Tranquil. Did not see Sebastian out there, which didn't really expect to see him. But since there were a bunch of new faces, or since there were some faces out there that we haven't seen a whole lot of this year, just overall as a team, you know, I wouldn't have been completely shocked if he would have been out there maybe for a little bit. So, Jalen Elliott, did you see when he came into the game for Tranquil? Because I'm wondering...
No, I didn't notice it right away.
I'm not sure when he came in, so I'll just hold my peace on that. Anyway, that pretty much wraps it up. We went through the different position groups. We will be coming back on Monday with another podcast talking about what are some changes we think we need to see. We'll also, I want to discuss, just looking back over the season, what are some things, just big picture, that happened and kind of shaped the season into what happened. Maybe some things that we should have picked on sooner that we didn't. And definitely we'll be continue to do our weekly podcast as we have been. We do have articles over on the website from Solon on a regular basis, so check that out, irishsportstalk.net, and join the forums. Even though the season is over, there's still a lot of things happening. Recruiting, there's these disciplinary actions from the NCAA to Notre Dame. There's a lot of things that are happening that we'll continue to discuss, and hopefully next year will be different. So
there's always next year.
Thank you guys for listening. We definitely... after maybe the final fourth of the season, our numbers did take a little bit of a hit, and I think people were just kind of tired of Notre Dame football. They just had enough, which I understand. But if you do want to help us out, if you would head on over to iTunes and leave a review for Irish Sports Talk, leaving a positive review, that would definitely help out the show, help our visibility. And maybe if you have a critique, which we have received in the past, we always are very open to that because we want to make this show better. Send us an email, mail@irishsportstalk.net, or fill out the contact form over on the webpage. So thank you guys for listening, And until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.